Welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Jeff Fiegels. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat. We're going to get you set for the final preseason game. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets along the way as we are winding down to the end of the preseason and getting set for the final 53-man roster, Jeff. And Ben McAdoo and a few players spoke yesterday. Ben McAdoo basically said that they are probably going to follow the same script that they did a year ago when it comes to playing time for the fourth and final preseason game. Now, if you go back to that game, everybody started on the offensive line with the exception of Weston Richburg. You had the starters play about 9 plays total, and most of the defensive starters did not play. JPP didn't play, DRC didn't play, Janoris Jenkins didn't play, just to give you an idea of what perhaps they're toying with heading into this contest.
Oh, Eli Apple won't play. Excuse me.
Especially with the ankle injury.
Yeah, so I listen, there's always a risk no matter what happens in these fourth preseason games, who you start and throughout the whole game, but you want to be careful. So I think the bulk of the preseason is over. I think the evaluation process, as we always know, is always ongoing. Pretty much I think the roster is in their minds is set. There's still a couple questions regarding some positions that we'll talk about, but really, you know, you look at the mindset here is to get your team healthy going in and start to prepare. I don't think they're really thinking much about the New England Patriots. It's a game. They gotta make calls. They gotta do everything. But the fact is, they have to play the game. Unfortunately, maybe one day we'll be sitting here talking about this is only the second preseason game and they're going to be going into the regular season. Which I tell you, I don't want to get on this subject, but it is. Involving the New England Patriots is what Bill Belichick is doing up there in the offseason and having teams come in and practice. They seem to be getting more out of that than a preseason game. So don't be surprised down the line when the new CBA comes up or whatever it is that this could be something that you see, in my opinion, that it gets cut down to 2 games. And really, when you think about the Giants and other teams, you know, they half price on, I think it's half price on preseason games.
Tickets with respect to that.
So yeah. the gate revenue and that kind of stuff, that all comes into effect, but you also have to, the health of the players come into effect too. So, but that's another day. But yeah, getting ready for the game, some questions to be answered, roster cuts, Saturday 4 o'clock. So a lot going on between today and Saturday at 4 o'clock.
And then Sunday they'll finalize the practice squad.
Yeah. A
few things I don't want to get to before we open up the phone lines, Jeff, and that's, you know, who has a big opportunity in this final preseason game? Okay, so the starters are not going to play, but that doesn't mean that there's not opportunities out there. And I think you start with the wide receiver position, what Travis Rudolph was able to showcase against the Jets. He made that big 57-yard catch, made a number of big grabs. Roger Lewis we saw heavily involved. The back end is still very much up in the air, and what complicates matters is the fact that Odell Beckham's still nursing injury. Brandon Marshall's back, but he's still nursing an injury. Dwayne Harris is back, but he's still nursing an injury. And Tavarius King is still out. So you're talking about 4 wide receivers that were in the mix last season. You know, there's at least question marks as you get ready to cut down to 53. Does that alter the mindset for the coaching staff that maybe we got to keep an extra wide receiver or maybe we lean towards the guy that's healthier?
Well, I think that's something that you have until Saturday at 4 o'clock to figure out because, you know, the health of all the players is different. And I think that when you get to 4 o'clock on Saturday, you got to say, okay, is Tavarius King healthy? Is Dwayne Harris healthy? So to answer your question about who to look at that position, I think this battle is between Travis Rudolph, Tavarius King, and Roger Lewis Jr. In my opinion, I think they keep one of those guys and the other two – not so much.
But well, that's why
I think Travis Rudolph is going to be your guy. That's just my opinion, and you know, not to say I told you so, but go back to the archives and I tell you that he was my early guy. I did, and it's because I like his character. We all know about his character, his work ethic. Big school, Florida State, undrafted guy, but came in here with a purpose. Play special teams, can return kicks, kick off, return punts. And you saw what he did against the Jets the other night. He can make some plays.
The other position to note is the kicker competition, and that's between Olgic Rosas and Mike Nugent. They have combined to make every field goal. They've combined to make every single extra point. Rosas clearly has been with the team since January. And I think most people are of the belief that unless Rosas does something dramatically to hurt himself in this next preseason game, that he would in all likelihood be able to solidify that spot.
And not physically hurt himself.
Yes, true. That's also important to note. It's not mentally, but that, also physically.
That job, in my opinion, is his to lose. I think it's always been his to lose. He's done nothing to lose the job up to this point. I even think that if he did miss a field goal in this game tomorrow, that it's not going to matter. I think he's fought off Mike Nugent. I think Mike Nugent has done well, and I think he's done good things for himself, be able to possibly be on another roster when the season starts.
And there's some kicking questions across
the NFL.
There's
probably three or four teams out there that are in a little bit of a quandary, Jets being one of them.
Yeah.
Mike Nugent did play for the Jets at one point in time. Arizona is another one. Jacksonville is another one, for those that keep tabs on kicking stuff like I do.
Even Tampa Bay,
depending on that.
Nick Foles.
So, but I think that job has is pretty much it is a competition, but I think it's leaning towards Rosas, and he's done everything that the team has asked of him. Come in and compete. We gave you the whole offseason by yourself to develop. Now we're going to compete against an established veteran. Basically, have stayed neck and neck with him, and unless you do something drastically bad tomorrow night, I think it's his job.
Another position where there hasn't been much separation, it's not necessarily because of efficiency, it's just we haven't really seen anybody make big plays that has really separated themselves from the group, is the backup quarterback competition between Josh Johnson and Geno Smith, and we expect them both to get plenty of reps in tomorrow's preseason finale. I know there's a lot of speculation, Jeff, that maybe Davis Webb, if they're not impressed with either one, would move up the depth chart. I don't think that's going to happen. I think that's highly unlikely. I think one of these two guys is going to win the job. The question is somebody going to do something Thursday night that you say, you know what, that's the it factor that I've been looking for? Because Geno, I feel, has moved the football quite well. What the concern is not being able to finish off the drives in a positive fashion.
Well, it's the question is who's going to do something good or who's going to do something bad that's going to solidify the position.
To allow the other guy to move up, I guess, yeah.
I got to believe that Geno Smith is your guy if he goes into this game and doesn't make mistakes, proves that he has command of the huddle, that he can move the team, situational football, what can he do? As long as he doesn't go in there and make a lot of mistakes, which he's prone to doing, I think this Geno Smith will be your backup guy. And Davis Webb will be your classic redshirt quarterback that's going to sit back and learn from two veterans, one being, Eli, who, if you want somebody to apprenticeship behind anybody, it's Eli Manning, and that's what he's going to do.
Other players to watch is Shane Smith at the fullback position, if they choose that they want to keep a fullback. Dante Dion, who's battling for that fourth cornerback spot and has another opportunity with all the injuries. And, another position I think is the tight ends, Jeff, because Evan Engram and Red Ellison, we understand, they've solidified their spots. Beyond that, though, Matt Lacoste, Will Tye, Jarrell Adams, and I think Adams does have a significant edge because he's still a very young player and saw some flashes out of him last season. But, they've all been relatively quiet, and part of it is because the lack of playing time. We've seen a lot of Red Ellison and Evan Engram and not so much of those three others. But here's a game where I think all three of those players that I named on the back end are at least going to be out there for a good portion of time.
And this is the juggling act. It's just it's a matter of theory, I guess. Are you going to keep that fullback? And then that means that they're going to have to eliminate one of the tight end positions. I think they're going to do that. I think Shane Smith's made this roster because of his versatility. We use that word all the time. It comes into play when you're in preseason. Your versatility. Can you play special teams? He has played exceptionally well on the four core positions that you play. Punt, punt return, kickoff return. Done well with that. Done good at fullback position, so that lends us to what? Now there's going to have to sacrifice somebody. And, the question coming into training camp with Matt Lacoste is, could he stay healthy? Well, he's stayed healthy. He's played well. But I think that this roster spot is up between Matt Lacoste and Will Tye. I think Adams is a guy that he's a draft pick, shown some promise, and you kind of like to hold on to those draft picks just to see if you can develop them a little bit. But if that's the case, you're going to have Shane Smith, Engram, Ellison, and one other tight end, and I think it might be
So three tight ends and a fullback in your mind. So then that means then, Jeff, based on your rationale, if Adams is the third tight end, and I would agree with you there, then that means that Will Tye and Matt LaCosse are on the outside looking in, based on what you just laid out, assuming Shane Smith makes the roster as a fullback. Because if you even go back to previous Giants rosters, and listen, you can read into that as much as you want. I understand there's new coaching staffs, new philosophies. I get that. But in the past, when they've kept three tight ends and a fullback, you know, that's been how they've gone. They very rarely have kept four tight ends plus a fullback. Usually that fullback is that fourth pseudo tight end, essentially.
And we talk, this is it's all about numbers. Where can we keep an extra guy that we need, and you know, that we can't over here, whatever it is. On game day, you have the inactives. So if you have that extra tight end, like a guy like Darrell Adams, okay, who's okay special teams guy, but you know, maybe he's inactive, you know, and then you go into the game with the two tight ends and the fullback. So that's kind of a, you know, it's touchy. It wouldn't surprise me if you kept two tight ends and one fullback. But I still think there's a margin of an error there. I don't know if I agree with just the two tight ends, because Ingram is a guy who is a hybrid in a sense. He's not that much of a blocking guy. You want him to see him in a lot of passes and stuff. So Red Ellison is your blocker, and then Shane Smith doesn't play on the line. So you do need another tight end to play the position. And really, when you talk about it, you would be going with the other big guy, which would be Adams or whoever. I know I'm all over the place on this.
No, I completely understand. I'm following everything you said, Jeff. But, you know, what I'm going to add to that is also, could the rationale be, and once again, this is just a hypothetical, if they do say that they want to keep two tight ends because maybe they want to keep an extra wide receiver, an extra corner because of the injuries at that position, do you feel confident that if Jarrell Adams went through waivers, he would pass through and you could put him on the practice squad? Because he is eligible for the practice squad. Yeah. So he could still very well go to your practice squad, and then you could call him up in the event that you need an extra tight end.
And you could say the same with Shane Smith.
Correct. Shane Smith, same thing.
So there's a good opportunity that you could shuffle those guys back and forth. And, you know, unfortunately, I don't think they're that caliber of a player where some other team is going to go after them, especially a fullback. There's not many fullbacks in the National Football League anymore. Jarrell Adams was a seventh-round draft pick. So, you know, it's kind of like, all right, we'll see what happens there. So I think that's probably a better scenario, if you will, about him bouncing back and forth. Those are some position you mentioned it, but that cornerback position, we continue to talk about that with the injuries to Eli Apple and just the depth at that position is a little bit scary. Dante Dion, I believe, has proved that he belongs on this team. He's a scrapper. The guy wants to learn. He's done well in preseason. Hunter, we don't know about Hunter with his concussions. We never know about these concussions. They could last 2 weeks. They could last 2 months. And that's something the Giants are going to have to figure out, because when they make that roster, 53 guys, you know, you got to include him. And what if he can't play against Dallas? And I know it's maybe one game, but the ramifications are that if they cut him, you know, he's injured. He has a concussion, so they have to do a settlement. There's a lot of stuff that goes into this. This is not only you talk about it all the time, about how, you know, it was a very difficult decision for us because the guy's been on the team for a long time and this and that, but there's so much that goes into creating that 53-man roster that a lot of people don't understand. And it's all about depth. It's all about contracts. It's all about veterans.
Yeah.
Remember that if you are a veteran and you're on the opening day roster, you're guaranteed your salary. These are kind of things that the teams look at from a salary cap perspective.
Financial implications.
And they also have to understand, we're also looking at the waiver wire. Are we going to be able to bring a guy in if we cut a guy? Are we going to be able to go and replace him for somebody that has been cut by another team, and we're going to bring him in here when we've had a guy in camp the whole time, we're going to let him go? He knows the system. He knows everything. So there's a lot of stuff that goes into evaluation and the scouts and the personnel department. That's what they're all about. They got that whole thing sitting here when they're making this roster moves going, this guy is better than the guy on our roster, and we think we've heard that he's going to get cut. Let's keep our eye on him.
It's essentially a domino effect.
No question.
Because when a free agent's out there, that is going to impact the guy that they currently have on the roster. And then if you keep X amount of wide receivers, that impacts how many tight ends you keep. And, you know, everything essentially impacts
how
one
many
another.
Teams right now are looking at their cornerback position going, Joe Hayden is available. Joe Hayden.
Changes. Their mindset, yeah.
So, I mean, he will not be out there long, you know.
No, well, we were talking right before we went on the air that the latest report I saw was Adam Schefter said that, believe it or not, a division rival, the Steelers, are the favorites to land Joe Hayden, who was let go by the Cleveland Browns. And I would assume that since you're Joe Hayden, who wasn't waived, he was outright released, meaning that he doesn't have to go through the waiver process, nor would he have had to because he's a vested veteran, so it wouldn't have made a difference. But the point is, Hayden can choose where he wants to go. And if you're Joe Hayden and you're a starting caliber corner, it's highly unlikely, unless winning at this point, given the fact that he's been in Cleveland, you're willing
to
you're going to say that maybe he has the mindset he wants to be a third corner, he wants to be a fourth corner. I'd still find that hard to believe. Even though he's been in Cleveland for so long, because you could go to a winning team, Jeff, and actually get a starting job. For example, the Steelers. The Steelers are the type of team right now. Joe Hayden came in, he'd be one of their starting corners.
There's no question. Yeah, and so, you know, and I don't know if there's a play for the Giants on that one, you know what I mean? But he wouldn't be a starting corner.
Once again, it's about opportunity.
Yeah, so.
It was like, I don't know if it was the show I did with you, it was earlier in the week, somebody threw out Darrell Revis. But Revis is another one. If Revis does want to end up with a team, is Revis going to settle for a fourth cornerback spot at this point in his career? I mean, listen, beggars can't be choosers, of course, but sometimes the player figures he's a starter. He's going to go to a place where he can be a starter, or at least compete to be one, as opposed to just be a complimentary one.
And if I'm Darrell Revis, you know, I've got the Brinks truck parked in the backyard full of all that money that I've made over my career. It's not all about money at this point. It's more about I want to play. And, you know, or I'm just going to sit home unless somebody comes and throws them a lot of money. But you're not going to throw a lot of money at a guy that's going to sit the bench and be your third or fourth corner. It's not going to work. Or, excuse me, fourth or fifth corner.
Well, and the other thing to keep in mind, remember, salary cap space can carry over. So it's not like you have to spend it. Now, granted, if you have an opportunity to improve your team, you shouldn't hesitate. But nobody says that, oh, well, this guy's out there. You have to now throw a bundle of money his way to make sure that he comes in when you know you could carry the salary cap space over to spend on your current players or perhaps potential free agents next offseason.
And I know there's somewhere we can see it. You know, when you look at the cap space for the teams, that also comes into it. You know, you might be a team that needs that corner and would love to go Joe Hayden, but you got $300,000 under the cap. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
So then what do you got to do? You got to go cut other veterans and get this guy and build some cap room.
Changes things in terms of how you structure your roster and the finances. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. He's Jeff Eagles. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for tuning in to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. All right, we're going to open up the phone lines. Jake is in Vermont. He gets us going. Jake, what's happening?
How we doing?
Doing well, Jake.
Hey, Jake. How are you? Thanks for holding.
I'm at work, guys, so I got to be quick. But I just wanted to make a comment on, you know, we had a call from Cleveland. I think his name starts with B. I think it's Clash, but I won't say no names. But the whole Eric Flowers, I was talking about how Eric Flowers does nothing but get beat. And exactly, on the phone fucking
Jake, we're going to let you go here. We're having a hard time hearing you, so we're going to leave it at that. Not exactly sure what he was alluding to there. In the meantime, let's hit up Chris in Syracuse. Chris, what's happening? I think he may have said
hey,
what I thought he said.
How you guys
said, doing? Doing well, Chris. What's happening?
You guys are getting people in trouble at work all the time.
Yeah, well. Well, hopefully
hey,
you
way,
are
that,
not trying to multitask, Chris. Yeah, we hope that you have a little bit more leeway.
That last call might get us in trouble.
Nah.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
By the way, I just want to say we do apologize if there was some unruly language utilized on the last call, so we apologize for that. But go ahead, Chris.
Okay. One thing I was just wondering when I was sitting on hold is when is the CBA up?
2021,
yeah.
I believe.
Oh, God.
yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, it's funny you say that because it is a long ways away, but it does take that time to prepare on kind of what's going to happen. And, you know, everybody's talking about it now, but it is so far away. But, you know, as a veteran player, you know, those are things that you got to start thinking about, you know. And everybody's talking about a work stoppage and all that kind of stuff. I will tell you this. For as long as I played in the National Football League and as long as I haven't played in the National Football League being retired, I will tell you this and you're going to agree with me. I don't think you ever really want to get into a legal battle with somebody that's got more money than you, and that would be the National Football League. So I would just kind of, you know, be careful what you wish for and understand that ultimately you can get some stuff by bargaining it, but the bottom line is, unfortunately, there's 32 owners and there's over 1,700 players. And the owners typically you get what they want in this situation. They really do. So, anyway.
Right, right. Okay, well, so the reason I was calling, two quick questions. One, who else can play center that might make the line other than Richburg and Jones?
Who else could play? You're talking about a third option.
Yeah, third option. That's a, you know, that's a good question. And I, if I kind of, I may think about where you're going here. So if Jones was to start at right guard, who is your backup center? You know, or it's,
yes.
I think two injuries away from that. Because if there was an injury at center and Jones was your right guard, he moves to center and Jerry or Fluker comes in at right guard. Then you got to think about what if Jones gets hurt at center. Now we're going too
deep
now.
Who would be the backup?
That's a good question. I would imagine that, you know, any one of those other guys would be your third team center. I don't know if it's Pugh.
I would say Pugh is the guy, Jeff. And the reason I say that is when he came out, they were even envisioning him as a potential center.
Yeah.
So I would think Pugh would be your emergency center, and he would move over from the left guard.
I agree.
That would be, I think, the first guy.
Yeah, right. Well, I hate to be the what-if guy, but I can remember we were in Washington a couple years ago, and they had three of them go down in one game. So that's just, that's exactly where my mind was wandering to.
Well, listen, it's the same thing if your long snapper gets hurt. You always usually have to have somebody that can handle that, God forbid, as well.
God forbid is right, because they're usually horrible.
Well, that's why I prefaced it with those words.
And real quick,
and you would know from working with the long snappers.
About Eli. Eli's my all-time favorite player. I just think he's a great guy, great player. I thought that he was pretty sharp the other night, had some really fantastic throws like he always does. But I wondering how much more prep went into the third game, because I've always felt like the strength of his game is really his ability to kind of have a plan and dissect people, maybe more so than the athleticism. And one other comment that I would make on that, I'll take it off the air, is just I do think that it's Geno Smith's job as the backup, because I think we're getting on Geno's case a little bit, and I just wanted to know your guys' opinion on this. If we give Eli a little bit of a pass, because frankly we love the guy, but he's had a lot of ill-timed interceptions, including I think the one the other night. Like, I understand he got hit, but I was thinking by this time, of course it's easy for me sitting in my living room to say this, but by this time you think he would tuck that under and take the sack. So I just kind of was wondering if we kind of are giving him a little bit of a pass there, and there's kind of some similarities there. Obviously, Eli is a much better quarterback than Geno Smith, but I do think it's a characteristic that they share. I don't think your answer off the air. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, Chris, appreciate the phone call. Thanks for waiting.
Well, I think that as far as the game planning for the Jets, there was a little bit more game planning for the Jets because it was treated as almost a, you know, like a normal game. So there is some game planning. Plus, not only from the game perspective, from a preparation perspective, it's an introduction to the team about how to game plan for a game. The first two games, not so much. The third game, training camp is over. You're on a regular work schedule. One practice a day, you're doing install, so they're getting players ready to understand what it takes during the week to install a game plan, go out and practice it, and then play it. This game, they're already working on Dallas, I can tell you that right now. I mean, in the meeting rooms and stuff, there's stuff that they're working on for the Dallas Cowboys. Not too much, because there's a lot of guys that aren't going to be here. And they certainly don't want to take any information with them. You know what I'm saying? But conceptually, they're starting to think about Dallas rather than the Patriots.
As far as the Eli to Geno Smith comparison, I don't think most people would put both of those guys in the same sentence. I mean, has Eli had interceptions in the past? Of course he's had interceptions. To use, though, the interception that happened in the last preseason game, when the caller was correct, Eli was hit, and he threw it up, so that left the ball up in the air. It was intended for Roger Lewis, and it was a fairly easy interception for the Jets. But, you know, there are some times where, Jeff, going back to the point that the caller brought up, where it's not good to take the sack, because then you're going to wind up losing a lot of field position and maybe taking yourself out of field goal range. So every play, to just have a generic statement and saying you should always just take the sack, I think is misleading, because a lot of it depends on where you are on the field and what down it is.
Well, there's situational football. You got to understand, as every player, And it goes all the way down to the punter and the kicker. You got to know the situation of the game. Are you down 2 points and you need a field goal and you take a sack and now you're out of field goal range? Well, then there, that's a no-no. Bottom line is, and we don't play quarterback, so we can't really talk about this that much, is that it happens fast. And if you can get rid of it, you can't get rid of it if you're in the pocket. So you either got to throw it away or somehow over the receiver's head. It's not as easy as we think. It really isn't. But, yeah, you got to understand that you can't take a sack in certain situations. So, but, you know, Eli Manning and Geno Smith, I mean, Geno Smith is – he is historically back-to-back-to-back-to-back games throwing interceptions that are just incredibly stupid. You know, Eli, yeah, he's got a few of them in there that we're like you scratch your head about. But, you know, Eli's Eli. I mean, the guy's very, very successful, and he's got a lot of hardware at home that he can prove it. But – the comparison there, I get what the caller's saying, but the fact is that, you know, I'm just going to be really happy when all this backup quarterback talk is over. I really am. Yeah. It's just like I'm going to really be happy when Charlie never calls in again and talks about the offensive line.
Well, that may never happen, I don't know about that. Jeff, speaking of that, we're nearing the end of the bet with the preseason winding down.
Oh, yeah. I mean, okay. I'm going to starve myself for 3 days to get that lobster and stuff coming down here.
So Anthony Doblin. Well, we're going to have to check in on the Falcons' final preseason game tomorrow night as well. So it's not just the Giants we need to focus in on. Going to have to watch what happens with Atlanta. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. How about Bash in Ohio? Bash, welcome to the program. What's happening?
Welcome back, Bash. How you doing?
How you doing, Bash? What's going on, Jeff? How are we doing?
Good. What's up?
I wanted to get into a little bit as far as y'all talked about earlier, as far as the waves and the release of a player, as far as the differences and how do they go about as far as the situation, as far as the waves and the release of a player. I know that we waived a couple of, like, Darius Poe and a couple of other players.
Powell, you're talking about.
Did talk about as far as Joe Hayden being released, but what's the difference in being waived and released?
It's all a matter of experience in the league. If you are a vested veteran, you're not on the waiver wire. If you are not a vested veteran, you go through waivers, and that, and I believe, up until the first day of the regular season, you know, the first week.
I think it may
go
actually like 3 weeks into the regular season.
Is it
3 weeks? Jeff, I'll look it up.
No, you're right. I think
it goes a little bit into the regular
season. It goes by draft order.
Correct,
so
the draft order.
The last year's draft order. So there's the waiver claim. So the first pick says no. It goes into the second, third, fourth, and so on, so forth down. And then, you know, eventually once you clear waivers, you hear that term all the time when he cleared waivers, meaning 31 of those teams didn't want that person. Now he becomes a free agent, a street free agent, and can sign with anyone.
And what Jeff means by vested veteran, just so you understand, Bash, is 4 years or more in the NFL. That's a vested veteran. So that's why Joe Hayden, if he were to be waived, it wouldn't make a difference. He could go and sign with just about anybody. Oladigizua, for example, is less than 4 years. So he goes through waivers, and then they go through from the first pick down. Okay, they go to each team, and you have an opportunity to go in and make a claim. That's why, for example, the Patriots released, or they waived, I should say, Coney Ealy, who they had just acquired in the offseason. Ealy was then claimed by the Jets because the Jets had a very high waiver claim if you go back to the draft. And Ealy also had less than 4 years in the NFL. He had 3 years, so that's why he had to go through waivers.
And they pick up the contract.
Okay, with both entities.
Yeah.
Okay, with both entities, does the team that released or waived the person that allowed them to pick them back up? Like, I remember you saying, like, going through waivers, they can pick them back up and stuff. As far as player, as far as that, he was saying, as far as you can – waive a player, and they can go back to the team as they got waived by. They have to go through waivers first.
Well, I think what you're referring to is if somebody is waived / injured, and there's an injured designation, what happens is if the player passes through waivers, he goes back to the team, and they obviously have to put the player on IR, but they can come to some type of a financial settlement based on how much time that player would miss if they project how the injury would play out, and then that player can become a free agent, or that player could just stay on IR for the remainder of the season. It depends on what the player and the team work out.
Okay, one more question. I'll take this offline. As far as I want to ask, as far as I know, we're going through 33 and the bottom of the touchdown, as far as I wanted to ask, as far as the status of, we haven't really talked about him all season. Is Stassi getting a training camp? Well, J.C. Thomas, he's still on the team. And as far as no training, no mini camp, nothing, no playing time, and the status, why is he still on the team? And as far as he's on the bubble, as far as this status of the team, as far as J.C. Thomas. I'll take that off the list. Eric.
All right, Besh. Thanks for the phone call.
I don't think it was a good sign that JT Thomas was in the fourth quarter of the Jets-Giants game. That, to me, doesn't go real well. So, you know, a lot of times in the National Football League, as many years as I played, I realized that, you know, a lot of times guys are hurt. The teams will get them, you know, they'll be healthy. They'll get them as healthy as they can. They'll pass their physical to get back on the field. Once you get back on the field, you're healthy and you're on tape, meaning it's easier for them to cut a guy if they're on the field. I'm not saying this is the situation with JT Thomas, but this is how it works in the National Football League. Once a guy gets healthy and he's put back and he's in the game, then, you know, then they don't have, there's no injury settlements, there's none of that stuff. He's there on tape, the guy can play, and then if they release him, there's no compensation whatsoever. So that sometimes happens. JT Thomas was a guy that's been battling injuries, you know, for a while. And I think that there's a guy, you know, like Munson. I think Munson is a guy that maybe, I don't know, maybe he slipped in on the – we didn't talk much about the linebacker.
Yeah, Calvin Munson and Curtis Grant
and
is another
Curtis
one,
Grant.
The two of them.
So, you know,
Grant can play all three positions.
And that's versatility again. So we'll see what happens with JT Thomas.
Yeah, JT Thomas, if you remember, he suffered the torn ACL in the opener last season. It happened right before the end of the first half in Dallas, so he – was out, and they even asked him the other day after the preseason game, Jeff, you know, did you anticipate getting back sooner? Because like you said, he didn't make his first appearance until the third preseason game, and it didn't come until the fourth quarter. And he did say that.
I remember that interview.
Anticipated.
That was the third-person interview. Remember?
Correct. When we were on the air, you're right. I referred to you off the air. I said, JT Thomas referring to himself in the third person. It's very interesting. You're right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
That was a notable interview. What's good for JT Thomas, I think he was quoted as saying. Yeah. That's why that interview did stand out. Yeah.
He's just, you know, he's had a hard time staying on the field, and just to get back on the field, he was happy with it. So,
but here's the thing with JT Thomas. I agree with you, Jeff, that, you know, if a player like that is getting in the fourth quarter, then again, you know, maybe they didn't want to throw him out there with the number one starters because it was the first time he was taking a hit. So maybe you could look at it through that lens. But I go back to what we were talking about with wide receivers, cornerbacks, where there's injuries. There's a lot of injuries at linebacker, too. Remember, Mark Herzlich is still sidelined. Keenan Robinson is in concussion protocol. If you're the Giants and you're concerned about depth, do you say to yourself, we'd rather keep a guy that knows the scheme, is a little bit more polished, is experienced, given at this point heading into the season, we don't appear to be 100% at that position?
Yes and no. Yes, if you feel that the other guys behind him are not comparable to pick up the system and can play. No, if you got a guy that is just as good and has stayed healthy, you make the switch. And younger. I mean,
which would be Calvin Munson and Curtis Grant.
Right. Yeah, so that's kind of the analogy there, in my opinion. The linebacker position is going to be interesting, too. I think that Calvin Munson is going to make this team because you need, you know, a guy like Mark Herzlich is a special teams core guy, can fill in and play. Munson is a very smart guy, picked up the defense really quickly, played the four core special teams positions. You know, that'll be interesting there. You know, I mean, will Mark Herzlich make it again this year? Seems like he does every year.
Yeah.
But at some point in time, you know, it happens. And maybe, you know, could it be that Curtis Munson is the guy? Or not Curtis Munson.
That's a combination of both.
Calvin Munson and Curtis Grant, there you go.
Yep.
Can make the team because of their versatility on special teams.
We were talking about the waiver wire earlier, and I just looked it up to confirm. So it's from the end of the Super Bowl until the day after the third regular season
week.
What
is the first?
It goes based on the draft. From the third regular season week on, it starts going in the order of the standings by record.
Then what?
Well, then the process starts again with the draft. Because the draft order is finalized by the time the season ends.
Okay, no, so after the third game, then what is...
it goes based on record.
Oh, go on record.
Go
on
record,
gotcha.
Yeah, the standings
gotcha.
They'll look at. So, yep, worst record gets the first waiver claim to the best record, so...
A lot of information in this stuff.
A lot of it. Well, and that's why this is convoluted. It's not easy. You know, you have to know who's a vested veteran, you have to know who's a rookie, you have to know when the waiver wire changes.
A vested veteran is 3 years and three games.
Oh, to be very specific, okay. I've seen the generic definition is at least four years, but that's because of the offseason. But you're saying that if you get to the point where you put in 3 years and three games, then you then become a vested
veteran. We would always tease the rookies that they're not rookies until their fourth game of the second
which
year.
Which is understandable now.
So they would be like, oh, yeah, we're second-year players. Like, yeah, you're still a rookie until you get done with that third regular season game. Like, no, that's not right. Like, yeah, it is.
Because you don't have enough seniority.
Keep bringing the donuts, dude.
Or keep picking up my helmet and taking it back to the locker room. How about that? Let's head back to the phone lines. 201-939-4513. Will is in Fort Meade. Will, what's happening?
Hey, Will.
Hey, how's it going, man? I just want to tell you guys, I've been stationed over in Japan, and you guys really, really helped me out.
Nice.
As far as being up on my Giants, I really appreciate that.
Man, we go all the way to Japan. That's awesome. Yeah.
And I'm assuming you're in the armed forces, so we thank you for your service.
Thank you very much. I got three quick points. I just want to throw this out there. I think that Shane Smith is going to be a lock to make the roster.
All right.
The run game just looks much better with him in there. And I think he's going to make it tough for the coach to cut him. So
okay, I will agree with you there.
Okay. My second point/question is, with the way that Brett Jones has played at right guard, how is it possible, or is it possible, that he won't be the day one starter at right guard?
So you're saying despite the fact that he's played well, do you think that there's still a slight chance that he takes over as the starter? I think a lot is going to depend on what they see out of this next preseason game, because I think we're going to see some activity from John Jerry, Brett Jones, and DJ Fluker, because that's a position that I still think is up in the air. I would not rule anything out. I think my mindset, Will, and I'm curious how you feel, Jeff, if you would have asked me this question about 2.5 to 3 weeks ago, I would have said, I think it's extremely unlikely that they're going to change the starting right guard spot. Now, I think I look at it more of a 50-50 type of situation, where I would not be surprised if Brett Jones is starting game one in the right guard spot.
I'll agree with the first part. I think we were talking collectively of the offensive line staying together and being better.
Yeah.
Then as the preseason games went on, we realized that that may not come to fruition, and now we had to change something. Coach McAdoo said it. Put those guys in there. Brett Jones, been playing well, been practicing well. The offense responded well. So there now lies that I don't think coming out of this game tomorrow, I don't think we're going to be able to clearly say, because I don't think that he'll tip his hat on this one, that Brent Jones is going to be the starter.
McAdoo, you're referring to in terms of.
But if he's not the starter, it wouldn't surprise me. But I think that he will be, because I see the production. I see to me, it makes sense. And then you can always go back to the other guys, okay? Or you just give John Jerry a short lease. I give him a lease. You can tell him
a
real
give estate. A lease. Listen,
I'm a real estate business.
That's right up your alley. Lease, you can give him a lease and you give him a leash.
Yeah. Give him a lease. Yeah, short lease.
Short
month
lease.
To month, game to game.
Not a long-term.
Not a long-term lease here. You're getting a month-to-month lease.
Yes.
So that's kind of the answer to your question, Will.
Okay, and my last point, and I'll take this off the air. There's a TV show that comes on, Sports Talk, and there's a player up there that talks a lot of junk about his game. And so I actually went and looked at some of the tape on him, and he reminds me of Evan Engram. And I just want to say, you guys think it'll be a bold prediction if Evan Engram is this generation's Shannon Sharpe? And I'll take it off the air. Thank you very much.
All right, Will. Well, appreciate you tuning in from overseas as well. Thanks again for calling in.
Well, Shannon Sharpe, that's a pretty good comparison. You know, I mean, he's pretty good.
Well, in terms of, I guess if you're going to make the comparison, Jeff, though, it's got to be style of play, because Engram's not a talker like Shannon Sharpe, at least at this point in his career. Sharpe was a talker, too. You know, and that's what the caller was referring to.
Still is, yeah.
Yes, he still is in terms of his media career. The question is from a stylistic standpoint.
Yeah, I guess you could. I mean, I see him being, they're both very athletic.
Yeah.
I think that Engram's going to be a steady player. I see a guy that's, you know, he's going to get better as he gets older, learns the system, understands football, understands his body, understands how to get hit, how to take hits. So I think he'll just be like a fine wine or just get better as time goes on. And I think you're going to see some big plays out of him this year, because I think the McAdoo, he's chomping at the bit to put him in positions to make plays. You're not going to see a lot of it in preseason, but in the regular season, it's all about matchups. He's going to match up on a linebacker or a safety. And he's going to eat them. He's going to eat their lunch. I mean, he will make some plays and some big plays. I see some big plays. Like, I'm talking like 40, 50-yard touchdowns on just maybe 5 to 10-yard catches, because he has that speed.
Well, Engram has shown that he can get separation. I know it's a small sample size, but we've seen it, especially over the middle. So to your point, if he has a favorable matchup in a game and he knows that this guy can't run with him, I think more often than not, Eli's going to say, listen, if I can get him the ball in the right spot, Engram can create enough distance where you're right. Yeah. It could become a 20 to 30-yard game.
And we talked about in the offseason, even before preseason, was what and Jerry Reese said it in his press conferences, it's all about giving Engram in – matchup positions, it mismatches. Get him on a corner. Get him on someone that, that doesn't match up right. Eli will read it, then boom, make a play. Make a play.
And that's the key for Evan Engram, to continue to make plays. And also, you know, let's not overlook the fact that, you know, the blocking aspect is something that they're going to monitor too. Yeah. And even Ben McAdoo's been on the record, Jeff. He said, listen, it's been growing pains, which is not a startling statement to be made. He's a young guy. He's unpolished when it comes to the blocking, but the more playing time he'll see is going to be based on the situations where they feel, you know, we could put him out there, Jeff, and he's not going to miss an assignment.
Yeah, and that time will tell. Time will tell on that, but from his pedigree, I think he's a smart guy. He prepares well, understands the defense, and I think that he'll be in a more favorable position than he will unfavorable going forward.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines, 201-939-4513. He's Jeff Fiegels. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for tuning in to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Getting you set for the final preseason game, talking about roster decisions as they near the cutdown to 53 on Saturday. Nick is in the Meadowlands. Nick, what's happening?
Hi, Nick.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Doing well, Nick. What do you got for us?
I like that, you know, that Shannon Sharp comparison right there. Let's hope he turns into that. And I agree with you guys. Over the middle, Lance, big time. And, Jeff, I think you're absolutely right. He's going to have a lot of big plays. Definitely.
We hope
matchup
so.
Nightmare.
Yeah.
Yesterday, Lance, I got way ahead of myself. It was the end of the show. We were talking. You remember what we were talking about with the turnovers. I wasn't trying to say that the defense is going to turn the ball over and score pick sixes every week. I'm saying, remember I was saying they force turnovers. That gives our offense a short field. So I'm saying they're going to create turnovers every game, and they're going to capitalize on offense over at least one of those turnovers.
Well, I understand.
I just wanted to slow it down, and
completely,
that's what I meant to say. I got way ahead of myself and short of time and everything.
And, Nick, that's how I was interpreting your point. I mean, I didn't think that you were –
they're not going to score a pick
I completely understood what you were saying, and Paul then was in correlation with what you were saying, but my counter still stands, and I'll let Jeff jump in here if he wants to. My counter is that no matter how much you tell me that a defense appears to be opportunistic and is comfortable with one another, you still, though, can't bank on takeaways because it's a very fluky stat. And I'm going to reference constantly because I think the Cowboys are the perfect example. 2014, you're talking about a team that was number two in the NFL in turnover differential. And then 15, they go to minus 22. So if you would have had this conversation entering the 15 season – and applying it to what the Giants did the previous year, you would have said, oh, team is opportunistic. They look good. Rod Marinelli's got these players jumping around. They should be able to do the same thing. And then what happens, you know, sometimes the turnovers and the takeaways don't balance out, and then all of a sudden you're in the negative, and you go from number two to 32. So that's the only reason. I'm not saying there's going to be a drastic jump for the Giants. I'm not one who subscribes to the philosophy. If you got this many takeaways the previous season, it's automatically going to transfer to the following season.
Thanks,
I'd almost put my money on at least one every game.
That's Ooh, still a
at
lot.
At least one.
I mean, Nick, that's a lot.
Because
that's a lot.
Look, Darian Thompson is going to be in the lineup now. Eli Apple, second year. I mean, JPP is always tipping the ball. I mean, there's all kinds of ways that this can happen. So I'm seeing at least once a game. Maybe that's too much, but that'd be great if they could do that once a game.
Yeah, I would.
No.
Yeah,
well, they had 25 takeaways last season, the Giants. I'm bringing up the numbers from last year. So, you know, if you're looking at an average of one per game, certainly they met that. But if you're looking for two, you know, they've got to even add seven more to the plate of what they had last season. And then if you go back to 2015, just as a means of comparison here to see what the jump was in terms of takeaways. I'm not looking at turnover differential. In 2015, they had 28 takeaways. So they actually had three less takeaways with a better defense in 2016 than they did in 15. And that's my point.
In 15, they were horrible.
Yeah.
But
that
they had
is
more
your
takeaways.
Point.
Yeah. That's my exact point. My point is, even though the defense is better and more comfortable, you can't bank on the numbers.
That's a funky stat.
That was the only thing they were good good at that season on defense was takeaways.
Exactly.
I remember
their fair
that.
Share
they,
struggles. Yeah.
They didn't do very good on the push up front or anything, but they did take the ball away. I do remember that. These guys, all these fans out here, just you guys don't hear, you know, the ones that don't live around here. You don't hear what we hear on the radio, on, you know, the local stations. And some of these fans, I'm hearing this stuff. It makes me crack up, man. Still hearing it about Eli. You're going to be crying when he's gone one day. I'm hearing people say Odell Beckham, that his the thing with the net and all this stupid stuff, they want to get rid of it, trade him? Are you crazy? What? It's like, let's go back in time and trade Lawrence Taylor, and let's trade Harry Carson and all these. Why would you do that? Some teams don't even know how to draft. And you get a player like Odell Beckham, and you're just going to let him walk away? You're nuts. And then people want to move the line around, move Flowers to guard, move Fluker to left tackle. It makes me laugh.
They want to play checkers.
Well, it should make you laugh, because those people really
Fluker
don't understand
didn't do good
football.
In San Diego, though. They had him on the right side for a reason. I mean, people, do they do their homework?
No, they don't.
Yeah,
they,
that's pretty
Eric
much
Flowers
the answer.
Played like 1 year in college at right tackle. Then he was a left tackle. I mean, come on. Wow. That would make this even worse.
Well, that's
anyway,
why Nick, we appreciate the phone call. And my response to that is, Jeff, that is why the court of public opinion does not dictate roster moves and personnel changes, and they leave that to the coaching staff. Because you can only imagine if they put to vote every move that the Giants had to do. Can you only imagine?
Wow, it'd be amazing what the team looked like then, too.
I was going to say, right?
All right, well, 51% say trade Odell Beckham.
There you go, majority rules.
All right, we just traded Odell Beckham, and now what do we get in exchange? Oh, well, I think we should go get Antonio Brown. All right, well, I think you think that's whatever.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You got to put things in perspective, and you also, you know, like Nick said, you have to understand the history of a player. You know, it's not so easy to just say, well, put DJ Fluker in a different spot. You have to see what happened in San Diego. Why did they move him? What was the reasoning behind that?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Was it play? Was it injuries? And where was he most effective? And clearly, the Chargers finally got to the point where he's most effective at the guard spot, which is where they had toyed with him after they moved him around to the tackle spot, too. Let's head back to the phone lines. Dave is in Cranford. Dave, what's happening?
Hi, Dave.
How are you, Jeff? How are you, Lance?
Wonderful.
Doing well, Dave.
How are you today?
Good, good. I'm good, guys. I'll try to be quick. I'm trying to take some coaching from Lance and not talk too long. So,
Depends on what you say, Dave. We don't jump to conclusions.
Maybe you should give some coaching to Dottino.
Well, that's a whole different story. No, it's good coaching, actually. So I've got two quick questions and one comment. So I'll try to make it quick. The first thing is, I agree with your comments on the right guard situation, where he's going to be on a short lease. I'm not sure it's going to be month to month. I think it might be series to series. And I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's a good thing that he kind of understands that he's got to produce and not make some, you know, really bad plays. And that there's a player right behind him that can be put in place at any time. And I think that ultimately is a good thing. But I do think they're going to start the season the same way they ended the season, with the same starting five.
Okay. Listen, we're on the same page there.
Okay. So my two quick questions, Jeff, these go both for you. So I'll give them to you, and you can answer them in whatever order you want. I want you to put yourself in Ben McAdoo's shoes. I think I know where you'll go with this, but I just want to hear you talk about it. Your job's on the line. You're the head coach. And let's just assume that in game four we continue the same path on the field goal kickers, and we don't see any big misses or any big issues, and they both produce at the same level. Who are you choosing, Jeff, you know, particularly with your perspective and why?
Well, I'm picking Rosas because he's younger. He has responded to the competition, which was put out in front of him. He was here the whole spring. He knew that they were bringing in another kicker. It was just a matter of when, because they told him that we want you to compete against a guy. So they go get a veteran. No better person to compete against than a veteran that's been in the league for 10 years. I mean, you can compete against another rookie guy that's never kicked in a game just like you have in a regular season. So that's not really a competition. And they said, you show us that you can compete with a 10-year veteran, and it's your job to lose. And I think that's where you're at. And why? Because the upside. Aldrick Rosas is 21 or 22 years old. He's got a tremendous leg. He's got a tremendous upside in his career, opposed to a guy that's on the downside of his career. So when you look at the bell curve, if we go to classroom, I mean, he's going this way and Nugent's going this way as far as, you know, age and
upside.
Career. Upside. Yeah. So that's why I would keep him. I'm not worried about him. I think I've gotten to know him quite in the last 2 months. Kid's mentally strong. He's got a good mind. He's got a good focus, good work ethic. He's going to be good. He's going to be a good one.
Good. I think so, too. Jeff, can you tell us why? I don't understand with a Rosas. Let's just say that he makes it.
Yeah.
What's the advantage of why we try these kind of cute kickoffs and why you just don't blast it back through the end zone, you know, on every play? Because I think last year there were a couple times where those times where we tried to either pin a team, you know, deep or in the right corner or put it at the 5-yard line or the 1-yard line. Those never seem to play to our advantage, and I just don't understand why statistically you just don't say, "Hey, I got a guy that can almost kick it through the back of the end zone."
Okay.
Why not start? Why not start there every time?
I'll give you some pointers here. Okay. Number one, weather. You know, a lot of times when you're watching a game, even at the stadium, you're in the stands. You don't understand the wind on the field. Sometimes you can't you can't bang it through the end zone, so you're going to hang it up there. The other one is the kicker. I mean, Josh Brown had an okay leg, you know, but he can't blast it out of the end zone. So you kind of run what you brung. You kind of go with what the kicker can do. And the third one is that it's all about scheme. When you're looking and you're preparing for a game, you see things on film that you might be able to set up a kick. They call it a mortar kick. It's just basically kicking it down there to like the 10-yard line. And the scheme is that we can beat the L2, L3, or R2, R3. The guys come running down. Can beat the other guys, and we get them inside the 20-yard line. It doesn't seem like much, a 5 or 6 yard difference, but it does, because when you go on statistics, any drives that start inside the 20-yard line, there's a number that they score. Maybe they score 11% of the time, but when it goes to the 25 or the 27, that number, say if it was 11%, goes up to like 16%. So that 5 or 6 yards may not mean a lot on paper, but it means a lot on statistics. And how the scoring ability from and how plays are. So it's all about just different aspects. It's a great question. It makes sense. Well, just bang it out of the end zone. Comes out to the 25 now, not the 20. So that's your difference.
Okay. The last thing, and Jeff, I'll just make this really quick. Can you tell us how Zach's doing and getting ready to start the season and how he's doing down in Miami?
I assume he's going to start, and
they got a top 20 team, so he's going to play some big games this year.
He's going to have plenty to say on this topic.
I was waiting for somebody to ask. I didn't want to bring it up. But, yours truly is traveling down Friday. I'm going to be leaving to go to the game, and Zach will be playing. They're playing Bethune-Cookman.
Perfect.
All right, and little warm-up game for the regular season, but Miami, they're ranked 18th in the AP. And Zach, I told him the other day, he's doing well, by the way, thank you. And he is starting, and I told him, you may not be playing, because they're playing Bethune-Cookman.
they may never punt. That's a good one.
So I was like, congratulations, but, you know, keep your helmet strapped up, and just, you never know, you might get in. But as a young guy, I would imagine that they're probably going to want to get a couple series where he can punt just to get some experience, because they play Florida State in 3 weeks. So that'll be a big game. But thank you for asking. I appreciate it, Dave, as always. And
you too, guys.
Thank you.
All right, Dave, thanks for the phone call. That's a great line to tell. But in fairness, though, he probably understands that too, no? Or did he really think that they won't get a first down or two against Bethune-Cookman?
No, he understands. He's been around football long enough. But I think from a coaching standpoint, you got to get him some reps in a real game, and it's
of course
a home game. So, you know, it's
a good environment to get the juices flowing.
Yeah, you want to get him that he's used to going out on the field and the routine of being in a real game. You know, he came from Ridgewood High School, playing in front of 500 people, going to go and play 58,000 in a couple in on Saturday. So I know he's going to have a couple butterflies.
Absolutely. Now, what about when you had your first taste?
Well,
how quickly did they throw you out?
My first game in Miami was against the University of Florida in the Orange Bowl.
All right, so that was a little bit different.
80,000 people.
All right, so you knew maybe there was a chance you were going to punt.
And we lost that game. So one of three games I lost in my whole career at Miami. So anyways. I was a little nervous. I was a little nervous because I went to a junior college my freshman year, and in my junior college, the Fighting Artichokes, as we were, Scottsdale Community College Fighting Artichokes.
The Fighting Artichokes.
That's what we were.
Well, at least you got a unique mascot. I don't think there's many schools that got the Fighting Artichokes.
I don't think there's anything such as a Fighting Artichoke.
I was going to say.
The mascot was great. You know, he's a big mat. He was
Fighting Artichoke.
But we didn't get exactly, you know, a bunch of people at our games either. So I think it was going same scenario.
Oh, that was a rude awakening.
It was
from
a little
the Fighting
bit
strange. Artichokes to the Hurricanes.
Yeah.
In a filled stadium. But the transition from college to the NFL, I'm sure.
That was a little easier just because, you know, Miami, we played in some big games.
Exactly.
And played in the Orange Bowl and stuff like that. So
now our producer.
Oh,
is
there
this,
it is.
Is that the
yeah,
logo?
That's it. That's him.
Now I would. Oh, here we go. We got a bigger image now.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Up. What's wrong with your computer?
It's not cooperating here. There we go.
There he is.
It looks like, to be honest with you, it looks like a green Hershey Kiss. That's what it looks
How
like.
How dare you?
It does.
How dare you?
It looks like
now,
I'm at Hershey's
I
Park
say it, I wish
and
the
guy's green.
I wish our viewers could see it, but the fact is it doesn't look anything like it's fighting.
No.
In fact, it looks like it's...
There's nothing intimidating about that.
No.
Yeah.
It disgusts me. Maybe we're just the artichokes. Maybe
so you're not the fighting. So now we're going to have to look this up. All right, this is.
I don't know if it was the Fighting Artichokes or we were the Artichokes.
The
now,
fighting.
One might ask why artichokes.
Yeah, that's what the bigger question.
Because
should
they
have
been. Back years and years and years ago, they used to had crops of artichokes. And this was an Indian reservation where this school was built, and there was crops of cotton and artichokes. There you go.
There we go.
Now,
so did I.
There it is, yeah.
So it is. Right, it is the Fighting Artichokes.
We are the Fighting Artichokes.
There we go.
Fighting
You're right. On the money.
Now, the other one, real quickly on the Fighting Artichokes, was that years and years ago, the student body wanted to pick the colors of their mascot. So they put it up for a vote.
And we were just talking about the Court of Public Opinion, by the way.
Well,
how
the Court of Public Opinion somehow, some way, got the color pink on the ballot. And so... Guess what? The Fighting Artichokes were a pink artichoke at one point in time.
So what did they do? They redid all the uniforms when that happened too?
I don't think the uniforms were pink, but the
See, that would have been something.
This guy was.
That one. Yeah, he changed colors, but you still stuck to the green format.
Yep. Actually, when I was there, we were blue and red. So they definitely have changed this.
Yes. Yeah, because now I'm seeing we're getting updated images.
Now that looks
See,
like a fighting artichoke.
See, that's more like
huh?
an artichoke. Yes,
that is
that definitely resembles because it's got the ridges. That's what I was looking for.
I was there in 1984, so just a couple years after it was established.
There you go. Well, we got a history lesson
now
on Scottsdale Community College.
I know we got to go, but I will tell you two more famous people from Scottsdale Community College. Okay. One, you're not going to know, maybe you may not. Josh Miller used to be a punter for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Okay.
Went to Scottsdale Community College. And my teammate, are you ready for this?
Yes.
You're not going to believe it. My teammate at Scottsdale Community College won Mike McCarthy, head coach, Green Bay Packers.
That's something.
Hmm?
See, you built up to that.
That's a really interesting
connection right there. So if I walked up to Mike McCarthy and said fighting artichokes, I have him right there.
You would say to him, Coach, artichokes? Fighting artichokes? He'd say, Yeah. Who was your teammate? One of your famous teammates? He would say me. I promise you he'd say
there
me.
There you go.
And now, this is how John and I play this game every Friday. Do you
Well
did
when
play?
He yeah, test you.
I mean, I didn't even know he was in the NFL as a coach until he came up to me when he was in Kansas City.
This was when he was an assistant.
Yeah.
Meeting.
He said, hey, Jeff, how you doing? I'm like, hey, he goes, you don't know who I am, do you? I'm like, no. I'm Mike McCarthy. I was your
you
teammate
really,
at Scott
you,
Sick
had, you had not had communication with him
had
since
no
you left school?
Since I left school.
Wow.
And even the years into the pros, I had no idea that he was a coach and stuff like that. So
that's something.
Yeah. Wow.
Have you ever brought that up with McAdoo, by the way? Because he was on
McCarthy's
staff.
No, I actually should.
You should.
I will bring that up with him.
That would be interesting to see if he would get a kick out of the fighting artichoke line.
And knowing Mac, you'd be like, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, anything else?
Move on, Jeff.
And I would be
I got more important things to do. You'd be animated.
This.
He'd be like, you know what? I got more important fish to fry here. All right, let's take a quick glance at Twitter before we wrap up. For those of you who didn't have an opportunity to get to the phones, as we look at the conversation about roster decisions and so forth, 201-939-4513, by the way, is the telephone number. Here's at AJ Marshall 3. Romeo Okwara, he played part-time linebacker in the last preseason game. So AJ's question is, why did the Giants decide to do that? And that really goes back to the versatility that we were talking about earlier,
correct,
Jeff, because if you have a defensive lineman that can be utilized at another position, when you are making the cut down, it gives you some options that maybe you don't have to keep as many linebackers because you can move a defensive lineman over.
Yeah, and you can bring him down and, you know, and he doesn't have his hand in the ground. He can play that linebacking position out there and see what happens. I mean, it's versatility. It's all about roster space and can a guy be play more than one position. You know, you're not going to ask Kerry Wynn to play linebacker. Romeo Okwara looks like a linebacker at defensive end. He's kind of a hybrid of it.
All right. We appreciate the question. We appreciate all the phone calls. There we go. Fighting artichokes. Who would have thought you would walk away from Big Blue Kickoff Live knowing more about Scottsdale Community College?
That's what I bring to the show.
There we go.
Knowledge.
We bring that knowledge indeed. All right. Tomorrow we're going to have a very special edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. It's going to be focused on interviews. We're going to have Art Stapleton on, who's going to help us preview the final preseason game and talk about roster cutdown. And then Jason Cole of Bleacher Report is going to help us preview the NFC East. So we're going to give you a taste of what to expect from the Cowboys, Eagles, and Redskins, as well as the Giants game tomorrow night. So tune into that. And then Jeff and I will be on our WCBS News Radio 880 pregame show starting at 6:35 p.m. Eastern on Thursday night, getting you set for Giants-Patriots. We'll have a full postgame show immediately following the broadcast. So hopefully you'll join in and tune in on those entities as well. Jeff, always a pleasure going back and forth.
All right. See you tomorrow.
Sounds good. For Jeff Eagles, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one right here on Giants.com.